Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, you guys can get at us on the hotline, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And as we think about the Lakers and Little Debbie snacks, now all I'm thinking about is I grade Anthony Davis's performance last night, because we had the Lakers star come back for the first time after missing 17 games with that sprained MCL. Came back, mixed results, 25 minutes, 8 points, yeah. But 4 blocks, you know, the defense looked better. All I'm thinking about now, Chris, is which Little Debbie snack would he be? Would he be the Cosmic Brownie that I think is a touch overrated at this point in its career? Because that's what immediately jumped to mind for me.
I would say he would be one of those, I think it's the Devil's Food Cake Sticks. I think I would put him in that lane. Like, it's one of those things that in the right moment can bring you satisfaction. But all in all, it's not something that you're going to run to the vending machine to get. You're not going to the store to pick those up. Like, you're going to the store for other things. And if it just so happens to be around and catch your eye, then you might grab a box. But I don't see Anthony Davis as being that guy right now. Like, I want him to be the pecan pinwheel. I want him to be, you know, one of the cosmic bars. But he's just not at that level right now. And I'm hoping that he can get back to that. But his return did help out on the defensive end. You saw him as a rim protector. He even got on the perimeter and blocked a couple of shots. And that allowed the Lakers to get some easy buckets in transition. They outscored the Brooklyn Nets 27-9 in fast break points. So that's an added positive. And for an offense that can use some punch up outside of LeBron James, I thought that that was something that was well needed. We thought that Anthony Davis's defensive presence could help this team on that end and ease some of the pressure that they're seeing on the offensive side. And so from that aspect, it was a win. But do I look at this as a Lakers team or an Anthony Davis that's going to be capable of propelling them to being a true title contender? I don't, Gojo. I mean, in the 25 minutes that AD played, he only had 2 rebounds. He's 7 feet tall. Bro, you can't give us more than that? That's a part of the problem that I have with it. Like, rebounding is just effort. Defense is just effort. And the fact that we didn't get more on the glass from AD and more from the Lakers as a whole, who were out-rebounded by 21 boards by the Brooklyn Nets, that's a part of it that's a little bit shocking to me. But they got a win. That's a step in the right direction. That's the second time that they beat a team that was over 500 this season. So you'll take them where you can get them. But this team still needs to make drastic improvements, needs to make huge strides before I'm going to buy into their brand as a true contender.
Yeah, Chris, I'm with you, but last night was a start, at least, felt like, right? Because we've seen this. LeBron, the Swiss cake roll of this entire operation, who's been balling outrageous on offense for the last few weeks here. Same bit of there. I thought he even looked more active defensively here. I thought the trickle-down effect from Anthony Davis's presence in the middle was massive for them on that end of the floor. And as they get ready to kind of figure out the rotations with the entirety of this big three of him, LeBron, and Russell Westbrook intact, I think we're going to see that bear even more fruit for them. The rebounding thing to me, Chris, I don't, you know, want to excuse it away entirely, because the things that you're saying are true. But at the same time, it was the guy's first game back in 17 games. Everyone was kind of trying to figure out how this would look. We heard from Frank Vogel on the way in saying they were going to try and make sure they guarded his minutes, figured this all out. So I'm willing to say that this is a starting point, net positive for the Lakers. It doesn't put them in championship contention right now. But based on what we saw last night, even against a depleted Nets roster, Chris, I would have to say overall, step in the right direction. It's a small step, but it's a step they desperately needed to take.
Yeah, they needed to take it. But here's the thing, Gojo, and I don't want to be the Debbie Downer in all of this, but I mean, when you look at it, you're talking about playing a shell of the Brooklyn Nets. They didn't have Kyrie Irving because it's a home game, and you know the COVID restrictions in the New York City area. And then they didn't have Kevin Durant. He's out for the next 5 weeks with a strained MCL. So you're talking about guys like Patty Mills and DeAndre Bembry being your second and third options. No Joe Harris for the Brooklyn Nets either. He's dealing with an injury. So outside of James Harden, there really aren't any threats that the Brooklyn Nets have on the offensive end. Only 2 other Nets players were in double figures alongside James Harden. The fact that it was a 2-point game midway through the third quarter, that's a problem for me, especially when you have your big three and the Nets only have one of their big three. So, yeah, maybe the rebounding issues, not as big a deal as I'm making them out to be, but it is something to pay attention to, because everybody knows to be a good defensive team, you've got to be a good rebounding team. The defensive possession doesn't end until you actually clear the board. And so that's an aspect that the Lakers obviously should have dominated last night, and they didn't. That's a part of the problem that I have with this team. On paper, it looks like a team that should be capable of being able to put together a run, stack some wins, and be higher in the standings. But for whatever reason, when it gets to the execution on the court, that's not happening. And I'm starting to feel like it never will with this team this year.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, a.k.a. Little Debbie Downer, because that's a – you know what? That's how I know – by the way, shout out to our producer, Ryan Matlack, on that one. The Little Debbie puns will not stop on this damn show. That being said, Chris, that's how I can tell you're a real fan in all this, because there is no one in the world who is willing to publicly doubt their own team quite as much as a person who actually cares about it. I can speak to this as a lifelong Notre Dame fan and former player, that I'm going to be the last one to buy in on them, the top-end success in all this. You're going to have to invite me, because I've been a part of too many of those awful moments here that have deprived our fan base of joy. So I can understand where you're coming from in all of this. Chris, for this stretch coming up here, what you mentioned with Anthony Davis, I think overall career arc for him, this is a massive moment. Because everything we went through in the bubble with him, where he was a top five player in the world, he looked like at times the best player on that team that had LeBron James on it. We have waved bye-bye to that, man. We have watched plenty of guys at his position start to catch up and lap him. And I feel like in this stretch, for Anthony Davis, we don't know how much it matters to him, the discourse and all this stuff. Players a little more insulated from that. But as far as the way he's thought about it as the Lakers' future and one of the best bigs in the league, this stretch coming up I think is going to go a long way in framing how we try and set this guy up heading in to the next few years of his career and the prime of his career.
Yeah, and that's starting tomorrow night because they got a date with the Philadelphia 76ers. So good luck with that one. And Joel Embiid, who dropped 42-6 against the Pels last night, and in his last four games has scored a grand total of 170 points in only 128 minutes. So good luck, Anthony Davis. We talk about how much of a force you can be, a potential defensive player of the year candidate. You're going to have to go out there and prove it against one of the guys that's doing it at the highest level right now, a guy that I would have as the front runner for the MVP alongside Giannis Antetokounmpo. So Anthony Davis is going to have to step up in that way. But Gojo, he ain't the only one. The Lakers need some of the supporting cast members to step up. Russell Westbrook has some learning to do in terms of figuring out how to play alongside LeBron James off the ball, and then when LeBron is off the court, being the primary ball handler. And then other guys like Malik Monk, like Carmelo Anthony, who both had good nights last night against the Nets, they've got to be more consistent. They've got to continue to be productive and help to space the floor to make LeBron James's life just a little bit easier. Because if those guys can continue to be knockdown shooters, they can continue to be snipers from the perimeter, that's going to create a whole lot more air for LeBron James to operate in half court. So I think those are some of the things that have to happen in the second half in order for the Lakers to get to where they think they can go.
That game against Joel Embiid is going to be one. I am very curious to see how Frank Vogel handles that amongst all people. Because if you want to flush the pipes and figure out where the cracks are, Joel Embiid is going to be the guy to do it for Anthony Davis. But as you wean AD back into this lineup here, putting him out to face the full brunt of that ain't going to be the way. You're absolutely right about the rest of that roster. But this is a great opportunity to, I think, get AD back in that mode you're talking about here. Because if the competition with that guy who has usurped you at that spot, who I've said Joel Embiid looks like Anthony Davis if he played with the edge that we all want for him, that's got to get you going if you're AD heading into that matchup.
But you know who else is going to get going because he's playing against Anthony Davis?
Joel Embiid.
I'm just saying, that cuts both ways, bro.
That ain't the track I want to be standing on when the train is coming through here. That will hopefully jumpstart the rest of the Lakers season, jumpstart your new year with Body Armor Light, the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. Shop now at retailers nationwide. Coming up next, though, we got to head back to the NFL because everyone is enamored with Aaron Rodgers' future and where he might end up next season. We got to get to the one team we believe everyone is missing in the conversation around Aaron Rodgers' upcoming offseason. That's next here at Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Mike Golic Jr. at ChrisCanty99 is where you can get at us on the CNG Twitter line. And I'm taking suggestions because now I'm hungry and we've talked about that Little Debbie open enough today on Canty and Golic Jr. I need your favorite NBA player and their Little Debbie snap comp right now. Chris, I've got two right off the bat I want to run by you here before we get to Aaron Rodgers' future and the team that everyone is missing, that we have put right there in front of them, that you brought up yesterday, that's going to help everyone ride into this offseason a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
I have Nikola Jokic as the donut sticks. Our producer Shannon reminded me that those existed, the glazed donut sticks.
Oh,
exceptional,
outstanding,
consistent.
Yes.
And underrated, and usually not one we think of right away, which, hello, Nikola Jokic. The other one I wanted to bring up, and this was a snack. I was up perusing the Little Debbie website, and I'd forgotten these existed. The combination zebra cake rolls. It's the Swiss cake roll with the zebra cake outside on all this. To me, that one's Giannis. Insane combination of skills, a five who can ball handle, a big man with range, something the likes of which we rarely, if ever, see. That, to me, seems like the place we got to go because, again, the Swiss cake roll, the number one head honcho for me.
Yeah, the Swiss cake roll is dope. One of the ones that I forgot about was the Nutty Buddy bars. Like, it's like one of those things that's covered in chocolate, but it's like a Nutty Buddy. It's unbelievable. So I would have that pretty high on the list, too. The zebra cakes, we got to throw those out there. I'm trying to figure out who would be a zebra cake in the NBA. Would it be Devin Booker? Would we call Devin Booker the zebra cake?
Devin Booker could be a zebra cake.
That's what I'm saying, because it's one of those things that's not necessarily acquired taste. Like, everybody can appreciate the zebra cake. I feel like everybody appreciates Devin Booker, a guy that embraces the Mamba mentality and that can drop 70 on your head in any given moment. That would be the zebra cake to me, so I like that. Plus, they were in the NBA Finals. Why not?
Devin Booker, true.
Zebra cake.
All right, there we go. So we got Devin Booker zebra cake, Giannis zebra cake roll, and Nikola Jokic as the donut stick here. Hit us up. We need to find a home for Nutty Buddy, some of the other ones
pecan
here.
Pecan spin wheel. We got to figure out who the pecan spin wheel is because that's outstanding.
That one's going to require some help from our friends. So, again, at ChrisCandy99, at Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $700 on average. All right, Chris, let's get to Aaron Rodgers here because we had his usual Tuesday appearance on the Pat McAfee show coming the week after they lost in the divisional round, getting stunned by the Niners at home. And so this was him starting off on, will there be a decision on his future coming up shortly? Chris, we know what's at stake for him if he stays with the Green Bay Packers. We know what that roster and the challenges it has in front of it are. But we have heard people all over the network, Dominique Foxworth and others, wax poetic about the Denver Broncos here. We had a producer on one of our other shows throughout the Tennessee Titans here. You got one team that we feel like everyone's missing right underneath our nose. Why is no one talking about the Indianapolis Colts?
I have no idea, but Indianapolis has everything you need in order to win a championship. Do you have a really good defense? Check. You're talking about a top 10 unit. Do you have a really good offensive line? Check. Led by Quentin Nelson, one of the best in the business. Do you have an MVP caliber running back in Jonathan Taylor? Check. Do you have a guy that can be a solid receiver, an emerging target in Michael Pittman Jr.? Check. Do you have cap space to be able to bring over Devontae Adams if you want to? Check. The Indianapolis Colts got $42 million in cap space. That's the seventh most going into the offseason. So please, Gojo, tell me, what do the Colts not have that Aaron Rodgers would want? Are you in a division that you can dominate? Absolutely. You're talking about having to go through Ryan Tannehill and the Tennessee Titans. Is anybody afraid of them? Certainly not Aaron Rodgers. You got the Houston Texans and the Jacksonville Jaguars. There's four wins off the top right there. I mean, so I don't understand what Indy doesn't have that Aaron Rodgers will be looking for if he truly wants to find a clear path back to the postseason and have an opportunity to compete at a championship level. People are throwing out the 49ers. We know that's not happening because they threw three first-round draft picks into Trey Lance. He's going to be the guy. People are throwing out the Denver Broncos. That could potentially happen, but you're talking about competing against Pat Mahomes, Justin Herbert, and we'll see what the Las Vegas Raiders become because they were a playoff team this past season. So I just feel like when it comes to the stars aligning and something making sense, Indy seems like it would make sense, and I get it. They don't have a first-round draft pick this year, but not having a first-round pick last offseason didn't preclude the Los Angeles Rams from going out there and trading for Matt Stafford. They just threw in two future first-round draft picks and Jared Goff for the hell of it to bring over Matt Stafford. So if you're Indy, why wouldn't you go ahead and get aggressive after you've already reconciled the fact that the Carson Wentz trade did not work out? It seems like it makes too much sense for both sides not to make this happen.
Yeah, Chris, I saw Dan Orlovsky throw this out on Twitter the other day, because in the last couple off seasons we've seen a team like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers go all in, get Tom Brady, strap people around on the side of that, and win a Super Bowl. We saw the Rams this year follow what we called on this show a very similar game plan of saying, hey, forget tomorrow. We're going to focus on today, giving the Godfather offer to get Matthew Stafford over there, getting Odell Beckham Jr., Von Miller, all these different parses. And I saw Dan Orlovsky ask, who's got to be the team that goes all in next? Colts, what are you waiting for? Because, Chris, you brought up that cap space. They've been sitting on that cap space for years right now. Every offseason we roll in, and it's like, when are you going to do something? They've played it safe. You brought Phillip Rivers over, who had the relationship with Frank Reich. You brought Carson Wentz over with that same reason. You went on veteran quarterbacks you could trust, but it wasn't a massive swing here. You got a roster with the equal mix of veterans you mentioned in critical spots, young guys on rookie deals you can still take advantage of. Swing big in this offseason if you are Chris Ballard in this organization, and go ahead with take what's out there right now. Give them an offer that they cannot look away from here, and forget the statue of Peyton Manning out in front of that building. Forget everything else here. You got a chance to bring that guy in behind a unit that everywhere else seems already made for this.
Gojo, let me ask you this question. If Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback of the Colts, do they lose either one of those last two regular season games against the Raiders or the Jags?
No, not a chance. Chris, like, and it fits within what they do in the offense. We know Frank's got a bunch of RPO stuff in there. Like, on and on down that list, we know some of the issues. And listen, those are issues that Aaron Rodgers has to answer once you get deeper into the postseason. But we know he's going to get you to that point, and then it's on the organization and everything else we mentioned to give him the best opportunity to get over that hump, along with Aaron slaying some of those now postseason demons that I think we can talk about as it gets to the top level.
I feel like this is such a good suggestion that some NFL team has to find a front office spot for one of us. They got to. Like this just makes too much sense. Like, we're sitting here giving the Indianapolis Colts the blueprint to become a true title contender. If you're tired of watching the AFC Championship game on TV, give Mike and I a call, because we can get you to where you want to go.
If you want to get through the AFC, it has become abundantly clear, Chris, the only way to do it, when you look up and down this conference, the 26 and under stud quarterbacks on this side are outstanding. You are not going to get over that hump with anything less than that in this conference. It's just not going to happen. So, Colts, baby, call us. Listen, we got ideas. I'm not saying, but I'm just saying. Coming up next, though. The Cincinnati Bengals have the most dangerous offense left in this postseason. Can Joe Burrow break football and do the impossible? Go on this way, getting sacked 9 times in a game, game and winning? We'll tell you next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Chris, we were asking for submissions, NBA players and their Little Debbie snack counterpart. I want to give you this one from San Franco. He said, Kawhi Leonard is the Christmas tree cake. He's not always in the lineup, but when he is, the undisputed number one on the court.
No doubt. I love that. He's seasonal, usually popping up in the postseason, so that makes a whole lot of sense.
You'll love to see it. All right, at ChrisCandy99, at Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter. We'll get to more of those submissions right now. But now, as we get ready for some more postseason football coming up this weekend, we got to head to the hotline to talk to three-time Pro Bowler Sean Merriman, who joins us now, one of the most ferocious pass rushers coming up in my lifetime. Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing well, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. We wanted to look ahead at some of this weekend because I actually thought of you and a lot of pass rushers, Chris, the guys that used to play on the defensive side of the ball, watching what Joe Burrow did this last weekend. The Titans sacked him 9 times and still managed to lose that game. Sean, as a defensive football player, were you ready to tear your hair out watching that defensive performance wasted in that game?
I mean, yeah, because, you know, in those situations, you're not supposed to lose, right? If you talk to any great defensive coordinator, they'll tell you, you win a turnover battle and you get a certain amount of sacks and you're supposed to win the game. That game they're supposed to win. But, you know, Ryan Tannehill helped them out too by not, putting up enough points on the board and also causing some costly turnovers. But there's no way in the world as a defensive guy you walk out of that game saying that we should have lost that at all.
Sean, speaking of winning a turnover battle, the Tampa Bay Bucs won the turnover battle on Sunday against the L.A. Rams, yet they caught the fade and Matt Stafford was able to deliver in the clutch. How surprised were you at the outcome with Brady coming on the short end of that matchup?
I was less surprised at what happened on Brady's side. I was more surprised that we actually seen Matthew Stafford beat a quality team and come through in a big time situation and finally get the monkey off his back of being in Detroit all these years. I said this, and I got a chance to see him train during the offseason. I got to see him, interact with other guys before. And I always said, man, this guy's a winner. And he's just gotten stuck into a bad situation, a bad organization. And now he gets the chance to show everybody in big moments that he can go and get the job done.
Kenny Engel Jr. talking to Sean Merriman on the hotline. Sean, with that win against Tom Brady in tow, do you think Matthew Stafford has that weight lifted off going into this weekend? Or is there even more pressure knowing he's going up against a quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo that very few people expect much out of?
No, look, no one plays for the playoffs, right? You don't play to go to the NFC Championship game. You don't even play to go to the Super Bowl and lose, right? Because it doesn't matter at the end of the day. You still lose. You're trying to win a championship. But I think the whole the way he's looked at, the way he has been looked at over his career is he's not the guy to take a franchise to the top. He's not the guy to put, the team in a winning situation. It's off of his back. No one can say now that Matthew Stafford is not that guy to take your franchise to the next level. We've been hearing that for so long over a certain period of time, and he's proving it right now. So that part of it he got. But for the Rams, it's championship or go home, right? It's championship or nothing. They have too good of a team. They brought in all the right pieces with Odell and Von Miller and everybody else. So they're more in the situation where they have to win, or what they've done during the course of this season and offseason doesn't matter.
Sean, a team that always looks at the upcoming season as championship bus is the Kansas City Chiefs. It's the first time in NFL history that we're talking about a team being able to host four consecutive conference championship games. They got the Cincinnati Bengals rolling into town. The Bengals are 7-point dogs. I know you've been a part of defenses that have shut down some pretty prolific offenses. Give us the game plan on how the Cincinnati Bengals would have to slow down Pat Mahomes and company.
Well, for one, getting 9 sacks against again, you're not winning that game because they're going to put points on the board. So that's first and foremost. Don't give up 9 sacks. You do that, it's going to be a blowout. On the other side of the ball, you have to not let Patrick Mahomes extend plays, right? He caused most of his damage when he extends the plays. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, these guys are going to find the holes in the field and get open no matter what. So longer he has the ball in his hands, he's going to make these big plays and make a big plays down the field. You want to make them one-dimensional, right? You want to stop the run and be able to put them in third and long situations where now they have to get a first down and get off the field. You have to minimize every big situation, nothing big down the field. Travis Kelce, those guys, Tyreek Hill, they're going to get their plays. You're not completely shutting them out. You got to stop the big deep threats down the field and the extension of these long drives and plays.
Sean, with all the quarterbacks that we're talking about in this, and a lot around the league, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, you can even throw in Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, guys who have tremendous arms but are also incredibly mobile. How much does it change the way you as a pass rusher would have to approach what you do each and every week, knowing these guys all now basically have that added element?
I say this, every 5 or 10 years the game changes. As much as, Chris and I and all the guys that played back in the day, we've seen two types of quarterbacks. Either you was a smaller, mobile guy, speed guy who can get around, but you couldn't throw. Or you would a pocket passer like a statue back there and had a great arm, but you couldn't move. And I'll tell you this, and getting a chance to watch a guy like Justin Herbert up close and personal and watch them during the offseason, and watching this guy walk into the room bigger than me and still able to go out there and move and run like that and also throw – We haven't seen anything like that in the last 10, 15 years of football.
And speaking of quarterbacks that seem like they're the prototypes or that they're unicorns, Josh Allen, what he did on Sunday night. I didn't think that we were going to see a performance better than what we saw from him in the wild card round against the Patriots when he posted the highest passer rating of any quarterback in any game this season. And then he turns around and he gives us that performance on Sunday in Arrowhead. Your thoughts on Josh Allen and his development and his leap in year 4?
That team, that organization wouldn't be where they are right now without Josh Allen. Stephon Diggs, former Terp, great player. They got some great guys, top defense. But that team feeds off of Josh Allen, and not just the offense, the defense side of the ball. If you look at the way he communicates, the way the rest of the team interacts with him, the way he makes and finish runs when it's time for him to tuck and run the ball. Look at the sidelines. Look at the rest of the team. He gets that team going. They wouldn't be in a position without Josh Allen being there.
It's been incredible to watch the development of a lot of these young quarterbacks over the course of this postseason here. Sean, we always appreciate you coming by and giving us some of this great perspective. We appreciate it, man. Thanks, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you again soon.
You got it, fellas. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Three-time Pro Bowler Sean Merriman, former Charger great, kind enough to join us on the hotline here. We talked a lot about him, though, Matthew Stafford and the jump this season. Coming up next, though, we will have to revisit some bad blood that spilled over onto the field with Matthew Stafford from this weekend. Next, here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Our thanks to Sean Merriman, three-time Pro Bowler, for joining us. If you missed it, download, subscribe, rate the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast wherever you get them. But now, we're halfway through the week. It's Wednesday, Gary, which means it's time to look back before we can go forward and remind you that people don't forget. And let's start this off because, Chris, the Kansas City Chiefs are starting to develop a pattern. We remember going back to the Super Bowl they won against the San Francisco 49ers, WASP. Patrick Mahomes and the audio of him going over to the sideline, changing the route in the middle of the play for Tyreek Hill that sprung the big possession that helped spark their win in that game. In this past weekend's game, Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes worked some magic that we've seen making the rounds on that final drive here, where Travis Kelce appears to tell Patrick Mahomes he's going to go off script on the play that they had called and exploit something that he saw there. Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce both got asked about this. Let's start with Travis Kelce in their presser Tuesday on him and Mahomes and that catch that set up the game-tying field goal. It was a cool moment, Chris. You could clearly see Mahomes yelling, "Do it, Kels, do it." And just that ability, that continuity between those two for a couple of years now, being able to build and trust each other in a critical moment like that.
Yeah, that's why chemistry matters, man. These two guys have been together for 61 regular season games and countless postseason runs. And that connection has yielded 386 catches from 548 targets, 4,981 yards, and 34 touchdowns, Gojo. That's where they at with it. So when you get into those types of moments, it's no wonder Pat Mahomes has confidence that Travis Kelce is going to come through. He's seen number 87 do it time and time again. And so it would make sense that you would go to somebody that is one of the most prolific tight ends the NFL has ever seen. So shout out to those two guys for having the confidence, having the stones to go off script from an Andy Reid drawn up play and do their own thing and come through for their team.
Likely drawn up on a cocktail napkin covered in barbecue sauce. Here was Patrick Mahomes on his version and his vantage point from that play as well. It was incredible. I remember Jahri Evans and Zach Streif were on the right side of the offensive line for the Saints for a long time.
That was scary, too. That was a scary combination, by the way, for defensive linemen.
Chris, I can only imagine because they also had that next level thing where the rest of us had to call out things. We had the different names and different codes for blocking schemes. And I remember Streif saying, "We've been together so long. All I got to say is ja, ja, ja." And he immediately knows what I'm looking at. We see it through the same set of eyes. Those reps over time, a big part of why the Kansas City Chiefs are getting ready to go to their fourth straight and host their fourth straight AFC championship game.
I hate when offensive linemen didn't have to call out the calls when they didn't give you an ace, a deuce, a tray because I didn't know that the double team was coming. So when you had what Jahri Evans and Zach Streif had, I didn't know what the hell was coming. Usually it was a double team, though. They love running a blast play behind those two guys. But I don't
know. I was going to say, the scouting report pretty clear on those two dudes, especially when you got a human forklift and Jahri Evans there in that spot. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. It was a disappointing loss for the Buffalo Bills, but good vibes. Chris, we've seen that Buffalo franchise go and reward other fan bases with charity. We remember when the Cincinnati Bengals helped the Bills make their first playoff in a number of years, and they flooded Andy Dalton's charity with money here. The Chiefs returned the favor. The Chiefs, inspired by the normal fundraising spirit of the Bills Mafia, turned their overtime win into a positive for the Buffalo community. They raised $178,000 for the Oshie Children's Hospital in Buffalo Wednesday morning as a part of their tribute to what they had seen. The donations came in increments of 13 in honor of the 13 seconds left in that game that Kansas City was able to capitalize on. Pretty cool nod from that fan base from one to the other.
Pretty cool nod from the fan base, but also a nod from the Chiefs fans to Josh Allen, who has a relationship with that hospital in a wing named after his grandmother. So that's pretty cool that they had that awareness of a guy that is going to be considered one of the best in that franchise's history to do that for Josh Allen, for the Buffalo community, coming off of what had to be a gut-wrenching loss in the divisional round. Like, that's a classy touch by the Kansas City Chiefs fans. It almost makes me want to root for Kansas City this coming weekend. But I won't.
Oh, really?
But I won't. No.
Can't go all the way through. All right, fair enough.
No, I mean, listen, I believe in take integrity. And I said before this is all said and done, Joe Burrow is going to have an opportunity to prove himself as that next quarterback to rival Pat Mahomes. We keep talking about the Brady Mahomes. The Brady Peyton Manning rivalry, and who's going to be that guy with Pat Mahomes? I voted for Joe Burrow. As great as Josh Allen looked, I need Joe Burrow to show that he can do it better this upcoming game, just so I can feel better about my take that I put out on social media after the wild card round. I'm just saying, go Joe. I'm all about take integrity. That matters to me. So I'm going to need Joe Burrow to stunt on him in Arrowhead this weekend.
And you know what the best part about it is, though? We saw those rivalries, but everyone involved seems to really like each other. We saw Mahomes go and run and seek out Josh Allen after that loss. We had legit bad blood on the NFC field on the other side. Because, we saw that personal foul from Ndamukong Suh after he accused Matthew Stafford of kicking him, which, boy, oh, boy, pot kettle, what's up there? Matthew Stafford's wife, Kelly, came out on her podcast and apparently said that Ndamukong Suh really dislikes Matthew Stafford, and they don't know why. The two were teammates with the Lions. So, Chris, you want to talk about people don't forget. That bad blood apparently followed them from the Motor City all the way out to that field in Tampa Bay for that one.
I know why. Ndamukong Suh was tired of being on the field because the offense couldn't do nothing. Outside of Megatron, they wasn't moving the ball. I can understand why Ndamukong Suh was hot. And Matt Stafford probably learned the kick and move from Ndamukong Suh when he did it to Aaron Rodgers. So listen, man, this goes back to when they were teammates. This is always one of those things, Gojo. You don't necessarily like everybody in the locker room with you. And then when you have an opportunity to get some get back when you're on the other side of it, you're going to take full advantage of it. So that's what was going on between Matt Stafford and Ndamukong Suh. But I don't blame Suh in all of this. I can understand why he wouldn't like his quarterback.
Sounds like someone speaking from a little bit of personal experience on this situation. Just maybe. Just maybe. Coming up next, we'll head and check out the Giants' new general manager and what he had to say about their quarterback of the future. Next.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.